the devotional lations, and also enjoyed our Sunday school lesson. Before I start in with the devotional, I just want to take this opportunity to thank you all for the blessing that you've been to my family this past summer and spring when our house was flooded and we were working on rebuilding it. There were many of you that came over and helped tear out wet sheetrock and insulation and carpeting. And when we got home, the house was dried out and humidifiers were, or dehumidifiers were going and heaters were going. Thank you all so much for that. And then there was a grocery shower for us and people gave money. And then during the rebuilding process, so many of you offered help, brought food, you spent your time over there helping, you gave good advice, you gave me your expertise. And I just want to thank you all so much. And I especially want to give recognition to Esther for giving us so graciously, sharing her place with us there, giving us a place to stay right up the road, and never any kind of pressure of, okay, we need you to move out here by a certain time or anything like that. And we were just so... I'm sorry, one reason I've delayed saying this is because I knew I'd get emotional. But we've been just so overwhelmed by the encouragement and blessing from our congregation this spring and summer. And now that we're basically moved in, we are living there and doing the last bit of moving stuff in. Just realize how much you all gave us, and I just want to say thank you. There's no way that we'll be able to repay you, but thank you. God bless you for all that all of you have done in helping us there. And this that doesn't necessarily tie in with my devotional, but I wanted to take this opportunity to be able to thank you all. I'm going to be looking over at Matthew chapter 10 for a devotional. This is a passage that I had read earlier this week. And there were just some thoughts in here that kind of hit me, and just like to look at the first 15 verses of Matthew chapter 10, the instructions that God gave to his disciples here as he sent them out, that Christ gave them, the people they were sent to, and this there's parallel passages to this in Luke chapter 10 and Mark 6. It seems almost like this was a trial run for the disciples, that they were sent out on this before Christ left them, so he could kind of critique them maybe or help them as they ran into difficulties. And many of you have likely read about this. It's been a couple years now since it's been found, but there was a man. He was a wealthy art collector who put together several very expensive artifacts and some gold and different types of jewelry, put it in a box and hid it out in the Rocky Mountains. And he wrote this little poem that was the clue to the treasure. And whoever found it would get to keep it. And people poured their lives into finding it. There were several people that died in the process. They were out there too long. One tried to cross a flooded river and was drowned. But it was a big deal. And there was one group of people especially that kind of came together over this. And they analyzed all this man's writings, every TV appearance that he had, every interview that he had given. They carefully analyzed what he had said. You know, is there a clue there to where this thing is? And they would go search here, and they developed these very complex theories about where this treasure must be because of this little word that he said over here, or how, you know, he maybe let this little clue slip, or And they went. In fact, some of them, after years and years of searching, finally said, you know what, it's all a hoax. We've looked in all the places where it should be, and it's not there, so it's obviously a hoax. And then a college kid read about this and thought, huh, this is interesting. So he read everything that this man had written, went out, and on like his second or third time out there, walked right to it, got it. And people were just, you know, you cheated somehow. You had an inside track with this guy. You know, he must have told you. He must have given you a clue he didn't give us. And his response was really interesting to me. He said, no. He said, I read everything he had written, and I realized, well, there's only one place this can be, because this is the way this man thinks. And so I just went where he would have put it. And there it was. So the difference was that there was these people that were carefully analyzing everything that he said and putting their own theories then on what he had said. And this college kid had looked at what he said and thought like him and went right to it. And it made me think of maybe how we work with what God gives us sometimes. Do I look at the words of God and I analyze them, and I try to put my own life over top of that now and kind of give my own theories and my own ideas? Or do I simply look at what he says and say, this is what he means? Am I able to see his mind? And I thought of that as I read this passage, how the way that Christ sent them out. So let's read this here, Matthew chapter 10, verses 1 through 15. And we had called unto him his 12 disciples. He gave them power against unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal all manner of sickness and all manner of disease. Now the name of the 12 apostles are these: the first, Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew his brother, James the son of Zebedee, and John his brother, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew the publican, James the son of Alphaeus, and Lebbaeus, whose surname was Thaddeus, Simon the Canaanite, and Judas Iscariot, who also betrayed him. These 12 Jesus sent forth and commanded them, saying, go not into the way of the Gentiles, and into any city of the Samaritans enter ye not, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And as ye go, preach, saying, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Heal the sick, cleanse the lepers, raise the dead, cast out devils. Freely ye have received, freely give. Provide neither gold, nor silver, nor brass in your purses, nor scrip for your journey, neither two coats, neither shoes, nor yet staves, for the workman is worthy of his meat. And in whatsoever city or town ye shall enter, inquire who in it is worthy, and there abide till ye go thence. And when ye come into an house, salute it. And if the house be worthy, let your peace come upon it. But if it be not worthy, let your peace return to you. And whosoever shall not receive you, nor hear your words when ye depart out of that house or city, shake off the dust of your feet. Verily I say unto you, it shall be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city. So the title I'm giving to this morning is Go to the Lost Sheep. They were sent to the house of Israel, to their own people. Now, the message of Christ was clearly for all people. It was for the Samaritans, it was for the Gentiles, and Christ made that clear both in his teachings and in his actions, in the parables that he told and the way that he interacted with people. And there were other times that the disciples then would be sent to non-Jews. But this time, he sent them specifically to their own people, to the Jews. And maybe it's because this was a good place for them to start. It was a familiar culture. It was a familiar language. It was familiar people. It was a good place for them to practice their witnessing. And maybe there's a lesson in that for us. Perhaps we look at missions as being the uttermost parts of the earth, and rightly so. We dare not overlook those. But maybe we need to practice right where we are. We need to start where we are, where we know people, where we know the language, where we know the culture. And it also made me think that this thing of shaking the dust off of their feet would have been maybe something they were a little bit less hasty to do if this was their own people than if it would have been simply, you know, some Gentiles or Samaritans that they kind of had a problem with anyhow. So maybe this was kind of a warning or a word of caution to the disciples themselves, how they let their emotions go, how they feel when they're rejected, that you don't just automatically shake off the dust of your feet, that maybe you need to think about this. These are your own people. And then take that same take that same attitude as you go out farther. I also had to think of the ones that would have had the dust shaken off against them. These were fellow Jews. Likely they would have felt justified in rejecting the teaching of the disciples. They were being influenced by this radical man over here. Although he was healing and so forth, his teachings were radical. And, you know, maybe they would have felt justified in saying, you know, we really don't want you here. You guys need to leave. But Jesus said that those are the ones that that will face rejection from me. So maybe there's a warning there for us as well. Maybe my personal affectations of righteousness might keep me from listening to the words of later the disciples were called unlearned and ignorant men, ones that I think might not have something for me. And we talked about that in Sunday school this morning a little bit, how we need to take things from people who are flawed, recognize that that can still be God speaking to us. Not responding to the prompting of our lives, of God in our lives, can lead to separation from God, as it did for these. And then the mission that he gave them. The one thing he said to do was to preach. And the message was to be the of the kingdom of heaven, that it was now here. And then he also said, heal the sick, cast out unclean spirits. And that was going to be the evidence of this kingdom's arrival, the power that it could heal diseases, that those who followed it could do things that no one could have done naturally, which was the casting out of demons. Only that was only a spiritual power. And in that, I see that Christ's message is equally needful and effective in healing small hurts, just sicknesses and diseases, you could say, or purging of entrenched sins and desires. You could call that the unclean spirits. And I also see that they were going to be giving from a spiritual abundance, something that God had given them. They were given this power to heal and to cast out unclean spirits. It was given by God. It's not because the disciples were faultless. Remember, Judas was given this power as well. So it's not because the disciples were perfectly pure that they were given this power, but they were given it and their job was to use it. And it made me think of the verse in Titus chapter 3, verse 5, where it says, not by works of righteousness what we have done, but according to his mercy he saved us, by the washing of regeneration and renewing of the Holy Ghost. God chooses to give us these gifts, and they're gifts from him. We don't earn them by good behavior. And then I also see that they were dependent on the charity of those that they were ministering to. And I think this is often a weakness maybe in the way that we approach missions, that it's easy for us to approach them as those who have attained, you know, and we're going to help, and we're going to give you the words of comfort or the humanitarian aid or whatever it is. And we do it from maybe a little bit of an elevated platform that, you know, we have arrived and you haven't, and so we're going to hand this down to you. And here they were going to be dependent on the people they were ministering to. Now, that's a way of leveling. We need each other. We need the input of those we are reaching out to as much as they need our input. And I think the lesson here is that we are not the blessing. The message of hope and salvation is the blessing. And then I see that God said, go. The instructions that he gave them, the advice that he gave them, the good lessons that were there wouldn't have done much good if they would have stayed at home and discussed it. If they would have been like some of these ones who searched for this treasure that I told you about, where they would stay home and they analyzed everything that he said, and they said, okay, now this would be a good plan. This would be a good plan. It could be, you know, this area. It could be this area. And they just sit and try to figure that out and not actually just go. Sometimes Christ calls us just to go. And in the end, we need to go. And we need to go where God tells us to go. So there are some questions that I thought of, and there's questions that I need to ask myself. When I'm given a chance to see the truth, how do I respond? When others do not accept the truth, how do I respond? If I'm given spiritual gifts or spiritual assistance, how do I use that? And when God calls me to go, how do I respond? Conclusion, the phrase there in verse 8 is something that I think we need to take to heart. Freely ye have received, freely give. I'm going to close with the verse or a poem from by a man named Leighton Ford in a book called Good News is for Sharing. For God so loved the world, not just a few, the wise and great, the noble and true, or those of favored class or rank or hue. God loved the world. Do you?